Welcome to Specs Speak Science, the scientific podcast hosted by a rotating cast of chemists and industry experts. From highlighting the hidden chemistry in our everyday lives to discussing relevant industry topics, Specs Speak Science looks to deliver informative content to the scientific community. With that, please enjoy this installment of Specs Speak Science.
Hi, and welcome to Spec CertiPrep's podcast. Today, we're going to talk about getting back to the bench, getting back into the laboratory after this very long period of being isolated, and whether you are going back to the bench for the first time in a couple of days or a couple of weeks, or in some cases, a couple of months, there are some considerations you need to think about. And we're going to just talk a little bit about the things that we have found that are effective of getting you back into the laboratory or getting you back up to full strength again in the laboratory. Today, we're going to be talking with Rebecca Bierman, and she's a sales territory manager at Specs CertiPrep. And I am Pat Atkins. I'm the senior application scientist at Specs CertiPrep.
Hi, Pat.
Hi, Rebecca. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Surviving like everybody else.
Absolutely.
So let's just jump in and talk about, let's say you're closed down. So how long has Specs has really never been closed down. We've kind of been on essential services, but we are considered an essential business. So we've been open, but our staff has really been limited. So they do encounter some of these problems. And maybe we'll talk a little bit about the end at it. If you've never closed down, but you're going back up to full strength, how you get that to happen as well.
Yeah, I think that would be really helpful.
Yeah. So if you're opening it up for the first time, Rebecca, what's one of the first things that you think that you really need to do if you're opening up a building for the first time in 3 months? What would you think would be something that would be important to do?
Well, I guess you would want to really talk to the maintenance guy and see how everything has been running. You know, has there been any damage? Has there been any power outages? You know, how is the building structurally holding up? You know, sometimes when we abandon, you know, facilities or even houses, you know, things start to happen and they don't get repaired in a timely manner. So, you know, was there a leak that needed to be addressed? You know, all of the plumbing hasn't been used in quite some time. Is that up and running? You know, something like maybe your electrical system's working correctly. Do you have all your network systems up and going? So your computers, your phone systems, you know, a lot of that sort of stuff. Is it ready to go? And can we start working right away?
You're absolutely right. And OSHA and other authorities say that's one of the first steps that a business must do. Are you ready to actually physically return? When a building's been closed up, you're right. There might have been some rain damage. We had some heck of storms in New Jersey last week. Mm-hmm. And did we get some rain damage? Did you get some mold? If mold is growing in places that you can't see it, well, in a laboratory, that could be a big problem. So people might be coughing not because of COVID, but because they have allergies to it.
Right.
You also want to make sure that any standing water has been flushed out. As a laboratory, you can't use that water if it's been standing for a while. That all has to be flushed out. And those are sources where bacteria and other molds can grow. So you really want to get rid of all of that kind of stuff. You do want to make sure that the plumbing works, the HVAC works. Have the filters been changed? Is the electrical working properly? So there is a lot to do even before you walk into the door. And each laboratory and each place of business needs a specific plan for their workspace. How do you get this back open again? So what about the laboratory? Some people are working with some reduced personnel issues.
Yeah, I know here at Specs, you know, we've been running an A team, B team sort of shift that has, you know, encouraged social distancing, but has also made, you know, some of our manufacturing processes look a little different than they used to a couple of months ago. You know, and during this time, this might be a great opportunity for management and personnel to really get together and sort of survey, you know, while they're having a reduced staff, what can we improve about our system? You know, is there anything that we're doing that is repetitive? Is it labor intensive? You know, things that usually have a lot of people around, but maybe we don't need that anymore, and that human resource could be used to go towards things that actually need it. Things like sample preparation is an area that can be very labor and time intensive. You know, if you want to up your throughput in your laboratory, you know, having certain sample preparation equipment might help you do that. It also help you with your if you need high reproducibility and better accuracy. And other things as a chemist or as a lab manager, you might want to look at, you know, are your auto samplers running to full capacity? Are they set up to run? You know, sometimes we are willing to, you know, let things slide in our laboratories just because we figured out a way. But right now, this might be some time for improvements on things like that. You know, using a batch processing system for samples and data, this could all really help streamline labs so that they can become even more productive with a reduced staff as we all start to go back to our workplace.
And that's very important. I mean, I know if you talk to your laboratory personnel, they all have ways that they think, oh, wow, this could be done more efficiently or this could be done faster. And it hasn't been done in the past. You're right. We've gotten into a little slump. We're used to the way we do things. But maybe you have an auto sampler tray that only can fit a dozen samples, but you've been asking for that 100 sampler tray for a long time. Well, now's the time to say, well, look, this is a reason why we can really use this. And you could start up getting your software and updating the things to make your throughput a little faster. Just remember, laboratories have some special needs when it comes to restarting your workflow. You need to worry about the air handling. You need to worry about the plumbing. I mean, yeah, we talked about air handling and plumbing in the building, but also in the laboratory. You want to make sure that you have a lot of airflow through that lab, get everything kind of moving and cleaned out. You want to make sure you flush all your water lines. You want to make sure that you clean all your spaces. Dust is awful in laboratories. We try to keep them as dust-free and clean as possible. But dust collects everywhere, especially in laboratories. And if you're working in a metals lab, that's a problem because, you know, dust has things like skin and it has rubber and cotton and PVC and silicon and lead and everything else. And it all settles and it becomes part of your sample. So you really want to make sure you clean out all that dust. And it's kind of counterintuitive there. People will say, well, I'm disinfecting, so I'm cleaning. Cleaning and disinfecting are slightly different processes. Cleaning means you're physically removing the dirt, the dust, the grime, and everything else. And disinfecting means you're killing microbes. So people think, well, I'm disinfecting, so therefore I'm cleaning. Not necessarily. You can have very disinfected dust, but it doesn't mean it's clean. So you really want to consider that when you're getting back into the laboratory about how you need to clean and disinfect, get rid of the dust, get rid of the standing water. Remember things like water baths or heating baths or different kinds of standing water that you have in carboys. Dump all the carboys, disinfect the carboys, clean them out because you get microbiome growing inside of containers. You also want to think about your solvents and all of those things that you might have left open before you left. So yeah, you opened up a bottle of methanol, you were using it, or methylene chloride or IPA or anything else. You were using it throughout the month before you left when the COVID pandemic happened. Now you come back and you have half a bottle of methanol. Yes, it's been closed, but is it still good? Is it really worth taking that risk when you can just dump it out and start fresh again? So you really want to look at what's been left in the lab over time and what needs to be now replaced or removed. Think about your water. If you're using a water filtration system or a water polishing system in your laboratory, the minute you get back into that lab, it does not mean it's good to use. Those filters need to be changed. Those UV lamps need to be checked. Everything about it has to be run. You have to flush out all your lines and all your systems. Phthalates build up very quickly in PVC and plastic piping in laboratory systems. So you want to worry about that. You want to make sure that you are getting the quality water that you need. So you're going to want to go back and refer to your ASTM guidelines for water, because for a laboratory, you want class one water, type one water, with very trace amounts of inorganics. So you want to make sure you're getting that high purity water. You also want to make sure that after a shutdown that you are, we forgot to mention it right up the bat, but when you walk in the lab for the very first time, what you really want to do is three things. You want to first know that you're safe. So you are going to try to test all your safety equipment. That means your eye flushes, your showers, your fire extinguishers, and all that. You're going to want to turn on the AC or HVAC system and get the air flowing. You're going to want to open the taps up. But before you do all of that, go to the wall and check the phone. Make sure the phone is working, because you don't want to walk into a lab and find out that in an emergency, you can't get any help. So check the phone. So I know we're talking about checking things. Do you have some tips on a checklist that that we can work with, Rebecca?
Our lab has actually worked up quite an extensive checklist, but we'll have like a full example of what we look for and what we suggest that other laboratories look for on our website. But some things like Patty has mentioned, you know, you want to check prior to when you enter your lab, your phone system, definitely super important. Is there appropriate supplies for your PPE? You know, and, you know, we talked about this, like, has the environment been inspected for water damage or any sort of electrical issues? You know, you really just want to make sure, like Patty said, that we're entering a safe building. Things that happen normally, but since people aren't there, they kind of get pushed to the side.
You and also want to make sure, sorry to interrupt, but it's important to make sure somebody knows that you're there. Make sure you check in and that people know, at least one or two people know where you are and what you'll be doing so that they can check on you from time to time.
And that would be important for management too, to know where their employees are, when they're supposed to be, where they are. And then that way you can help with social distancing as well too, because everybody is in their designated area. For your general laboratory, you know, you want to make sure again that your HVAC system is running at the temperature that's for ambient conditions. That's really important. You know, maybe you have samples and it's been too hot in the building. Are those samples any good anymore? You want to open up all your water taps and spigots and flush. Again, like Patty mentioned, you know, are your eye flushes okay? Can the shower... the shower pull, does that work? Is everything operating appropriately? You want to get rid of all standing liquids. You want to make sure that you have all of your proper safety equipment, like your first aid kit. Is that there? Is that available to you? You want to check for your chemical spill kit for expirations. You know, is that going to work if you happen to have a spill or an accident in your laboratory? Are your fire extinguishers up to date? Check the emergency life and other safety items. And you want to make sure your computer systems are starting up as well, too. You know, hopefully if you've been working from home, you've noticed that, you know, all the computer systems are set up. But sometimes when we get back to the network, it doesn't always work as smoothly as we would like to. And again, Patty has mentioned some of these things. You want to check your inventory. What's in your stock room? What are your reagents? What are your solvents that you're using? Have things been left open? Do they need to be discarded appropriately? You want to check your expiration dates for any sort of standards and solids that you might be using. And you want to discard any materials that are subject to environmental change. So again, if the HVAC system has been turned off and you've had a couple of hot days, is that compromising some of your materials that you would use in the lab? And some final points that you can look at, you know, for your hoods, have the filters been changed? Are they up to date? You want to gather and discard any sort of debris that might have showed up. Again, even like dust, these things are important to get rid of. And Patty could speak to this about, you know, they can cause more contamination in your lab, which you probably don't want. And again, you want to maybe start a list and reorder the chemicals and the standards that you might need. That way you can get back up and running quickly.
Now, if you're running an instrument, of course, you have your own startup procedure. But first, let's just check that instrument for physical signs of problems. While you were away, did some ceiling tiles collapse on top of your LCMS? Do you have to clean out the vents? Do you have to maybe take tarps off of things? Look at anything. If you're running a liquid system and you basically drained it before you left, or even if you didn't drain it, you left it at the point where you stopped it, check out, make sure your fittings aren't drying out, that you may need to replace some septum or some seals or fittings. Order some more consumable parts. This is the time you can say, look, I had to throw out a box of septum because they got brittle. I mean, they were in a lab with no air conditioning and they're brittle. So now it's time to replace it. Check your liquids. Any liquids that have been left in your system, flush them out. Don't flush them through the system. Dump them and then flush clean liquids through it. You don't want to be flushing contaminated liquids through your system. Replace your gases. If your gases have been sitting for the past month and not being used, just switch out a new cylinder. Put a new cylinder on and replace your glasses. Remake your eluents. Remake your buffers and your mobile phases. Perform your maintenance and cleaning. This is a really good time for you to do all that annual maintenance and cleaning that you usually do on a system. Make sure that everything is up to par. Refill your calibration, your tuning solutions. So you want to really kind of get into the detail. Pretend that you have all this time in the world to really fix things and start them up right. And then you need to do your validation processes. You want to prepare fresh internal standards. You want to run your levels of detection, your levels of quantitation studies. You want to run blank studies. And you're going to need to requalify your instrument if that's necessary. So you really need to run these washes and blanks and then try to requalify or tune your instrument. But on the personal side, I know we've all been following some general rules, and these still apply. So let's just kind of remind you on how to take care of you.
Yeah. So as you're going back to work, you know, it's important to understand how the situation affects you and your family and your fellow coworkers. So we're specifically talking about COVID because everybody knows about it right now. You want to know how it spreads. And we know that COVID spreads through person-to-person contact. So it's important to maintain that 6 feet social distancing rule of thumb that is recommended by the CDC. Also, it spreads by droplets. So if you're sneezing, you want to make sure that you are covering your mouth. If you're sick, you want to make sure that you're wearing a mask and to protect yourself and your coworkers, because these things all get taken home, or even at home, you want to make sure that you are protecting yourself. So ways that you protect yourself, the number one way is to wash your hands for 20 seconds with soap and water. And it's really important that you use soap, because soap is what will be able to break down the virus and then to wash it away. And then the time that it takes is very important. So, you know, sing happy birthday twice in a row, you know, count to 20 as you're washing your hands, whatever works for you. But that 20 seconds with soap and water is the best thing that you can do to ensure that you do not have the virus on your hand and that you're not contaminating other surfaces or even touching your eyes or your face. You could also use hand sanitizer, and you want an alcohol content of greater than 60%. Again, having that high alcohol content is very important to protect yourself against the virus. You want to avoid touching your face and avoid close contact with others, because we know that it spreads through droplets, and we don't want it to, you want to protect yourself from those droplets. So do everything that you can to keep yourself clean, and that will ensure that you're helping your coworkers to be protected as well. So if you're sick, please stay home. We all know this. If you feel sick, stay home to protect your coworkers, cover your coughs and sneezes, you know, all common practices that sometimes go to the wayside, but it's a new world out there. So we need to be mindful of that. And then you want to wear a mask if you're sick. And hopefully if you're sick, you're staying home. Some of these things, a personal checklist that maybe your manager might give you, this is really important, just again, to remind you, you know, stay home if you're sick, encourage isolation between your coworkers, and management might encourage you this if you are in contact with somebody that has COVID-19. You want to support working from home as long as you can. I know for our chemists, they didn't have that option. And so we really had to make sure that they were safe in our laboratories and on their way to work. You want to have an action plan with dealing with a sick employee that presents itself on the job site. So if somebody's sick, is there a plan in action to isolate them, to disinfect? You want to review the policies that human resources will provide so that you are up to date on what they are doing and that you are following any sort of health policies or requirements that the company may have. And you also, of course, want to review any sort of government guidance documents from the CDC or OSHA. You know, a lot of these things will be provided for you, I'm sure, as you return. And you just want to make sure that you're up to date and that you're following those rules, because it helps protect you and your family. And then that way, hopefully, we can all get back to some sort of normalcy. So some of the things that we've been doing at Specs in regards to social distancing in the workplace and in the laboratory is that I've mentioned that we have had started shift work. So this is reducing the number of chemists that are in a lab at a given time. We're having that staggered work schedule and having them on different days, and they have a cleaning schedule that they perform throughout the day. And then there's also a deep clean between each shift, which I think is very helpful and critical right now to make sure that we, you know, reduce the spread if there is any. You know, all meetings have been arranged by via the phone, or we've all become very comfortable with Zoom. You know, we've stopped any travel or in-person meetings with customers, just because also any essential personnel in the laboratory, you know, should be issued any sort of placard or information for essential work, so that as they're traveling, you know, if they are to come in contact with any authorities, they can tell them, you know, I'm allowed to be out here and I'm allowed to work and this is where I'm supposed to be. You know, all of these things are really important and things that we have put in place to help protect our chemists and our employees so that hopefully we can still provide a great product.
So let's talk about cleaning and disinfecting. We talked a little earlier that cleaning and disinfecting are not the same thing. So you do want a cleaning process, then a disinfecting process. Now, COVID has been found to be viable on surfaces anywhere from a couple of hours to a couple of days, but this is not the primary route of how people are exposed. But just in case, you need to know how to clean it. Now, everybody needs to develop a plan. You need to list all the areas you need cleaning for, the types of disinfection products you'll need, and the lists of resources and equipment needed. So this might look like, okay, your list of areas for cleaning, your laboratory, your benches, your floors, your hoods, your instruments, your computers, your desks, your personal equipment, things like that. So the type of disinfection products needed. Well, if you're in a metals lab, you probably don't want to use things that have hydrochloric acid in them. You probably want to find things that have more organic components that are not going to impact your work. On the other side of the coin, you're going to want to worry about organics and solvents and things like that in the lab if you are working in an organics lab. So you're going to compile a list of the disinfection products you need. And then all the resources. Well, I'm going to need the professional cleaners to come in here and move the desks so the floors can get cleaned. I'm going to need maintenance or instrument maintenance to come in and help me move equipment. I'm going to need mops. I'm going to need buckets. I'm going to need cleaning wipes. I'm going to need disinfectants or hand wipes. So you write all of this down. You develop your plan. Then you implement it. You clean your surfaces with soap and water if possible. So if you can, some sort of cleaning fluid, soap and water, clean your surfaces. Then you disinfect with appropriate disinfectants. And these, like I said, they can be acid-based. They could be base-based. That sounds a little funny. They could be alkaline-based. They could be things like different solvents, like alcohol. Alcohol has become a very important commodity during the COVID crisis, whether it be ethanol or isopropyl alcohol. These are very important for cleaning. And again, above 60 or 70% is what's needed to disinfect. And then you're going to revise and maintain this cleaning routine. As Rebecca said at Specs, we have daily cleaning, which the individual employees will do throughout the day. And then in between shifts, we have a professional cleaning crew that comes in and they do a deep clean and a disinfection plan. So you want to also maintain your safe distancing and your safe practices. You really need to refer to the CDC. They're coming out with more information every day about safe ways to clean and disinfect. One of the important things is to break down the virus in disinfection. You just don't want to clean it away. You don't want to wipe it away. You want to dehydrate it, or you want to disrupt the cell capsule. You want to disrupt the genetic components, stopping the virus from replicating and spreading. And to do that, you need some sort of antiviral or antibacterial agent that is appropriate for viruses. If you go to the CDC website or if you go to OSHA website, they have lists and lists of different different cleaners, things like ethanol. Now, you really need to keep ethanol on a surface for anywhere from 1 to 5 minutes for that time to break down that viroid capsule and really dispense with the viral content so that it's not active. Something like iodine, if you use it, it's going to take you 10 minutes. That's going to have to sit there for 10 minutes before it actually does any good on breaking down the virus. Hydrochloric acid as well, 10 minutes. You're going to need to have it sit there for 10 minutes. So you can't just take one of these instant wipes or these instant sprays, spray it, wipe it away and walk away. That's not how this disinfection works. You need to put it on the surface, let it sit for several minutes, depending on what it is. Again, we said like alcohols are 1 to 5 minutes. Formaldehyde can be 5 to 10. We do have a list of active ingredients and contact time. That's what it's called, contact time, in our document about Back to the Bench, which you can look at and download from our website. You also want to have it at the proper concentration. Ethanol, you want it 70%. Something like a formaldehyde, it's 0.7%. Isopropanol, it's at least 50%. So depending on what disinfection agent you want to use, you're going to need a certain concentration. Again, we have that information and references on our website on how to prepare and disinfect. What kind of things, though, should we look for? I think, Rebecca, you have a few suggestions on some surfaces to look for.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we have a couple of checklists. And again, as Patty mentioned, this will be available on our website. You know, things that maybe we don't think about all the time anymore, but we need to pay attention to. So your keyboards and your monitors, your mouses, you know, anything that you're going to be touching a lot, you want to make sure that you're cleaning them. So anything on your desk, pens, scissors, staplers, you know, tape dispensers, doorknobs, light switches, different instrument computers, your instrument knobs. You know, maybe you have two chemists that run an instrument and you want to make sure that those knobs are disinfected. So it's really important to pay attention to, you know, all of those things that we didn't think about before. You know, pipette handles, balance buttons, hood controls. You know, we want to just make sure that we touch every surface and touch it appropriately. And, you know, Patty was giving a great list of all of these different disinfectants. It's really a chance to relearn how a lot of these things work and how to use them appropriately. So it's a little overwhelming, but it's also a good thing because then we can really get at it and make sure that we're keeping each other safe.
I know these chemicals, Rebecca, are, you know, people are buying up these chemicals, these disinfectants, but I know you have an opinion what's actually more effective.
I think the best thing to do is to use soap and water. You know, I mean, in a laboratory, you might have to use certain different disinfectants, but it depends on what you're doing in your laboratory. You know, like, are you doing biological samples? You know, you want to make sure that you're using the appropriate cleaning material that isn't going to cause contamination or and affect your lab process. You know, maybe like you mentioned, if you're in a metals lab, you really got to be careful of dust and how that can affect, you know, a lot of your materials, your starting materials, your standards. So, you know, we really have to evaluate and look at these things to make sure that we're using them appropriate. But I'm a big fan of soap and water, particularly for the person themselves.
So why is soap and water effective?
Well, soap is really helpful because it is a molecule that has both a hydrophilic, so a water-loving end, and then a lipophilic, which is a fat-loving end or long hydrocarbon chain, like proteins and lipids and fats. And what happens with soap is it works as a surfactant. It's able to attach to, in the case of COVID, the outside molecule or the outside of the virus has a hydrophilic membrane. I'm sorry, it has a hydrophobic membrane. And so the hydrophobic end of the soap molecule is able to get, able to break down that membrane that is protecting the virus. So you have to do that. And then as it protects it, then the hydrophilic part of the soap and the water can get in there and denature the DNA or the nucleic acid information that's in any sort of virus. And then as you wash it away, it goes all down the drain. And again, you have to give the soap time to be in contact with that water You have to give soap time to be in contact with the virus in order for it to actually work appropriately.
So you're singing Happy Birthday or the ABC song for a while, aren't we?
You are. And it's very important to take that time. And, you know, I think as it becomes, you know, socially, you know, you won't see everybody in the bathroom, you know, just like rinsing their hands with water. They're actually going to take the time and, you know, you're going to get the side eye if you're not doing it correctly. So.
Well, a funny story. I was grocery shopping a couple of weeks ago, and I went down the aisle, and somebody gave me the stink eye, and I realized there were arrows on the floor. Oh. So I guess you're right. I said we're going to start getting the stink eye when we're not doing things right.
Right, because you know people are worried, and we want to make sure that you know we're not the problem. You know, nobody wants to be the outbreak monkey in this situation. So.
Well, speaking about personal protective equipment and how do you keep yourself safe, that was another thing. We used to give people when they would be wearing masks on a plane or they would be wearing masks at a conference or at a business meeting. We would kind of look at them funny like, wow, you are paranoid. But now it's actually become pretty normal. Even at the beginning of the COVID outbreak here in the United States, the advice was only to wear a mask if you were sick. Now the advice is, well, if you're out in the open, if you're out in a store, you should be wearing some sort of mask.
Yeah.
But we really have to understand not all masks are the same. So it still is protecting the outside world from you for the most part. It's not really protecting you from the outside world.
Right.
But that being said, I mean, if you're going out, and I know I personally have 3 or 4 masks that are made out of fabric, and you know, I probably wouldn't trust myself walking into a COVID infected area wearing this particular type of mask because it's not the N95 respirators that we're talking about. So just because you buy something on the internet and it says it's great for protecting you against COVID, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's true because there are different kinds. There are different types of face masks. There are different types of respirators. Mm-hmm. The little cotton that you wear or the little surgical face masks are not really protecting you a lot from COVID. It's protecting you a little bit from any splashes or sprays. So if somebody is close enough to spray or spittle in your face.
Or sneeze on you.
Yeah. It is going to give that kind of physical barrier. But for the most part, it's protecting the people around you from you. So
so
you have to be aware there are different kinds.
Also helps like if so you don't touch your face as much, or if you do touch your face, you have that barrier. Like you said, there's like a physical barrier.
It's a physical reminder. You're right. The only thing is if you're like me and you wear glasses, it steams up your glasses quite a bit.
Yes, my husband has had the same problem as well.
They do kind of steam up your glasses a little bit. And if you're claustrophobic, the first time I put on a mask to go into a store, it took me a little while of deep breathing to really relax and say, okay, let's do this. Because if you're not used to doing it, if you're not used to wearing a face mask, and if you wear a face mask as part of your job, that's a different story. Those have been fitted for you.
Right.
They don't feel particularly confining in most cases, or you're used to wearing them. But now the public at large and laboratories at large are putting face masks on, and it's become a little challenging. They're not one size fits all. You know, I put a face mask on my daughter to go out to do something, and it's falling off half the time because it doesn't fit her right. It can be kind of challenging. And the same thing with things like gloves. I mean, it's just like not any old pair of gloves are going to do. I mean, there are different porosities of gloves, different types of laboratory gloves. If you're working with a natural rubber glove, well, that's not really good for things like methylene chloride. If you wear a natural rubber glove or a latex glove and you're using methylene chloride, it's going to go right through the glove.
Eat it right up.
If you're using ethanol and IPA and latex gloves, it's going right through the glove. So you're not really protecting yourself. So now is the time for you to check that PPE. Is it what you need? Go to NIOSH, go to OSHA, go to CDC, go to ISO. Look up the guidelines for what you need. So if you need a glove that is resistant to acetone and ethanol and IPA, don't use latex gloves. You want to use something a little sturdier, like a butyl glove. You might want to use a nitrile glove, depending on what solvent or what disinfectant you're using. So I think we've kind of covered a lot of area about how to get back to the bench, how to get back into the lab. And I know it can be a little overwhelming, but everything we've been doing over the last 3 months just continues. And now is the time to really challenge your company, challenge your managers, saying, I need this. I need this automation. I need this PPE. I need this training. And make sure you're being given training for it all as well. So, Rebecca, you have any last thoughts?
I think we've come up with a lot of good starting points, and I'm sure regulatory departments and a lot of companies are going to hate us because they're going to need to reevaluate a lot of these things. But it's actually, you know, kind of exciting. You know, you talked about, you know, looking at auto samplers and different solvents. You know, it's, you know, maybe this is the time that as a chemist, you get that column that you wanted. You know, there's a lot of, you know, there's some good that will come out of this. You know, it's just going to take a little bit of work and a little bit of time to get it right and to make sure that everybody's on board, which is very important as well, too.
Well, I think that we've kind of covered all the bases when it comes to going back to the bench and getting back into the lab. Thank you for listening, and hopefully you'll join us again soon.
Thank you.
Spec Speak Science is presented by Spec CertiPrep, a leading manufacturer of certified reference materials and calibration standards for analytical spectroscopy and chromatography. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider rating the podcast and subscribing for future installments. Similar content such as application notes, research studies, webinars, and more can be found at SpecCertiPrep.com. Thank you for listening to Spec Speak Science, and we look forward to bringing you future episodes.